That's raised by Neil Blunt. As to why, how is it fair that a Kodesh Baruch Hu should create the world in a situation where one guy is raised to born to a chacham, a guy that knows, has knowledge of Torah, and he has the opportunity to really become a tzaddik, right? And another guy is born to somebody. One Oshkosh, doesn't even know he's Jewish, right?
Well, his
parents converted.
Ten generations ago.
Roman Catholic. That's the one of those cases. The question is, where is the fairness? Where is the Ashgacha? That's the question, right? Okay. The question is, who is better off? That's the question. In other words, can we say, perhaps it doesn't work the way, perhaps within the guy's realm, this guy who's born in Oshkosh, within his realm of Bechira, that's what he's being judged on. So therefore, he can have a bigger chayav and olam habah than the other guy. Or do we say, no, that there would be a decided difference between the two? What do you say? The guy doesn't have much of a chance because he hasn't seen much chachma. You know what I mean? I'm talking about chachma satori. I'm not talking about a guy who turns on television. I'm talking about chachma satori, right?
Yeah.
So the guy in Oshkosh doesn't have that ability. He's never seen the chachma. So I can have appreciation of something he hasn't seen.
Well, I'm saying.
The question is, who has the higher chelik in Olam Haba? Why do I mean in general? All right. Who has the higher chelik in Olam Haba? The guy in Oshkosh or the guy that's raised in Chochma? How do you know that? What does that depend upon? What question does it depend upon? No, but it depends upon a question. Yeah, right. What's two possibilities? What's two possibilities? Question is, what's the nature of Olam Haba? What are the two possibilities? Go ahead.
The two possibilities are, you can say, number one, it's the actual quality of the perfection of the soul.
Yeah, or?
Or you could say it's the...
The question boils down to one thing. It's a question we've been taking up for the last 2 months. The question is, what is Olam Haba? Is Olam Haba a lollipop? In other words, is Olam Haba something that God gives you in return for your strivings? Or is Olam Haba a natural result of what you are? Now, if you say that Olam Haba is where God comes over and gives you a candy bar, right? So then the guy in Oshkosh could have a better candy bar than the guy who was born in Williamsburg, right? But if you're going to tell me that it's a natural result of the state of the soul, right? So then there's no comparison. You can't say that a guy, unless you're going to tell me that somebody's soul who has knowledge is in the same state as a person's soul who's ignorant. That would be an impossibility. So therefore, the guy in Oshkosh would seem to be out. All right? Okay. The Rambam says, and Neil mentioned something. Neil mentioned, okay, forget about Olam Haba. What about Olam Hazeh? The Rambam mentions in Chelek that a person who lives according to Derech HaTorah, why should a person live according to Derech HaTorah? Not because of Olam Haba. Al tikav Olam Hashem Shem HaSaralam and Afikah Pras. Shouldn't do it for Olam Haba. Why should do it right here and now? That's the reason why a person should keep it there. What's right here and now? Because this is the best life. A person who understands Torah Mitzvahs knows that this is inherently the best life. It's not the, forget about it, you don't need any bribes. This is the best life right here and now, today, tomorrow, every day. And the Rambam says Olam Haba is only a natural result. He who has the best life here will naturally continue over there. That's around, right? So therefore you can't tell me the guy in Oshkosh has the best life here. That's impossible because he doesn't have any knowledge. Right? So therefore the question is thrown back again. It's unfair. Why should one person really be deprived from the good life? Okay? For instance, we don't understand why God chose tefillin as a mitzvah, to remind you of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Maybe other things. No one could ever answer that. Because God knows in his infinite wisdom that this is the best thing to use as a reminder. Right? Okay, so that type of question we can't answer. But he wants to know whether we know that Kol Derech of Mishpat, God's ways are just, and we want to understand where the justice is over here. It seems to be an injustice. Now, we could always say, in the end, we don't understand it. That's a possibility. But let's see if we do understand it. Okay. His argument is that we certainly can't know every detail, right? Like, for instance, I mean, somebody was born in, was kidnapped by Russians, and they were raised in a totally atheistic environment. Where's the fairness? Okay, granted that. So therefore, that's the case. That being the case, so we could always show you a case where a guy could never make it. Right? There's certain cases. A kid was born in a concentration camp. He lived, How could he work on that list? It may have been possible, right? He died there, and that's it. Certainly a case like that. So where's the fairness? Where's the justice? Right? Okay, so he says, so we can't answer that question, obviously, right? Okay. Yeah. Good point. So therefore, he says the whole question is unanswerable. That's what his argument is. Does everybody agree with that argument?
Why is it unanswerable?
Because the truth of the matter is that insofar as the reality is concerned, the reality is that the only good is the Torah, Torah mitzvah. That's the only good. But the physical is only there as a means, right? But the point is, in regard to doing chesed, you have no right to make that decision. Whereas chesed is always to help a guy with Torah mitzvahs. But besides Torah mitzvahs, it's to help a guy monetarily, to help him emotionally, to help him. You have no right to make a decision in chesed and say, look, I don't want to help this guy emotionally. If I make him feel good, he'll get a big ego. If I will do this, it'll be worse. You have no right to do that. Chesed, the chiv in chesed is to simply help the guy, make him feel good, help him monetarily. You can't decide, I'm not going to help him monetarily. Oh, it's better from this way. I see he's gaining. He's kind of more abstract. Down to 100 pounds is very abstract, Okay. In other words, alright, Duns is like this. We have to define what justice is. Okay. What's number two? Take Duns' question. Duns' question is, what about justice? Okay. What is justice? Or what we mean by justice, we mean fairness. Am I right? Okay. What is fairness? How do you define fairness? All right. Anyone want to give a definition of fairness? Yeah. What is fairness? Is fairness dependent upon your expectations? If fairness is equal, right? So then it turns out like this: that if, for instance, you find an ox and you find a chicken, are they both equal? No, so then it's not fair.
What do you mean?
In these species, there should be equality. Then I'll ask you a question. Why is it that equality must exist only within the species and not between the species? If equality is a principle, why should we relegate equality to within a certain domain? Shouldn't equality really be related to the entire creation? So if the equality should exist within the species, equality should exist between the species. Why should we limit it to within the species? All right, so Robbie gives a definition. The definition of fairness is each thing is treated according to what it deserves. Okay? All right. When I say fairness and equality, right? Fairness, would you say that fairness has to do with equality? In other words, with fairness, no? According to your definition. According to your definition. Is fairness and equality two different things, or is fairness the same thing as equality? According to Robbie, I want you to understand something. According to Robbie, fairness and equality have nothing to do with each other. I'll show you why. Because equality is only possible when you have two things. Isn't that true? When you have more than one. Isn't that true that then equality is possible? But if you say you give something what it deserves, so then even if you only had one, you would be involved in the concept of fairness. Correct? Okay. So the truth of the matter is that when in the United States, when they talk about equality, equality really is wrong. You're not after equality. Because if you're after equality, then you're saying that if there are two people and one gets X, then the other one has to get X. Right?
Rich and poor.
But if there's only one person, then it wouldn't matter what he got. Right? Okay. It's an interesting thing. It turns out, you understand what I'm saying? In other words, let's say, for instance, when you speak about equality, so equality really isn't inherently, it doesn't mean anything. Equality has no meaning, really. Because let's say, for instance, you'll take everybody in the United States and you'll treat them badly. There'll be equality. Right? Isn't poorly, right? That's equality. Equality really is the term equality, when people use equality as having to do with the justice, it's really wrong. It's an accidental feature. What do you mean by an accidental feature? The truth of the matter is that the person shouldn't demand equality. What he should demand is what he deserves. You see? Right? That's all. That's what he really should demand. inequality is only will only show you if there's inequality. If there's inequality among equals, it would show you that you are you cannot be giving the individuals what they deserve, because since they're both equal, they both must deserve the same thing, and yet you're giving one thing and the other another thing. So therefore, by doing that, you're showing me that you're not really giving the person what they you're not really giving one person what he deserves, because it's impossible, right? But the truth of the matter is that equality itself is not really an ethic. Equality itself is not really an ethic, because equality is not what the person is striving for. The person is striving for what he deserves. You understand what I mean? So therefore, let's say, for instance, in a society, you have a society. The only reason why equality comes into the picture is parenthetically comes into the picture as an accidental feature, but not as an essential feature. Because if, for instance, you have two people that are equal, so they're going to have to say that they deserve equal rewards. Now let's say, right, now let's say, for instance, these two equal people who deserve equal rewards are not getting equal rewards. They're being treated unequally. So then definitely you will have to be saying that they're not getting what they deserve. One of them isn't getting what they deserve. So equality is only a logical tool which will show you whether people are getting what they deserve. But equality is not an inherent thing to strive for. You understand what I mean? It's a tool that will demonstrate whether you're treating people according to the way they should be treated. Follow? But equality per se is not really something that has any value in terms of it's not an ethic, equality. Because equality can be, you can treat everybody miserably. Right? Equality will only show an inconsistency in certain cases. It will demonstrate that there's an inconsistency, and therefore you cannot possibly be treating people fairly. You can't be, shouldn't use the word fairly. Can't be treating them according to what they deserve. See? It's only a tool, but equality per se is not an ethic. Okay? All right, that's good. Or at least we clear that up. Okay? Forward. Now we say like this. We say it is treating a person according to what he deserves. Right? Okay. Now, when you say what a person deserves, what do you mean by that, what he deserves? I'll ask you a question. Let me elaborate a little bit. How does a person get to deserve something?
What
does actions want? You mean then within the realm of once he has... Could you speak of what he deserves before Bechira or after Bechira only? Yeah, when you say what a thing deserves, can you speak of what a cow deserves or what a dog deserves? Only what it deserves only in terms of a person. The word deserve over here is not a clear word. And we say deserve. Because deserve has the implication that a person did something and he deserves a reward. Right? That's only possible if you say there's bechira. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
But if you say there's no bechira, you can't speak in terms of deserve. Right? So I want to know whether you say that you have to give a person what he does, is it with bechira or without bechira? Yeah. You understand what I mean? In other words, deserving means where a guy striving to accomplish did something. But the servant say, well, a rock deserves this. You can't speak, well, what does a rock do? You know what I mean?
I don't understand that.
What? Doesn't deserve imply, I mean, at least to me, doesn't deserve mean that because of what you did, something that the person did, now he deserves, he's entitled to something. Right? Yeah. He's looking at it a different way. Now, what do you mean by deserve? If you mean something else, then we have to use a different word. What do you mean by deserve? Doesn't deserve mean really that you have a certain right? You have a right to something, right? Okay. Now, well, what gives you the right? Let's say, for instance, God creates an animal, right? And he decides not to feed it. And you say the animal has a right to be fed. What gives it the right to be fed?
I think
Let me ask you, let's take the question a different way. If you speak in terms of deserve, right? Could you ask a question like this? Let's say you have, well, it's a different question. Let's say a person is born an imbecile, right? And another person is born brilliant. Would you say that it's not fair? It's unfair. It's unfair. According to his definition, you wouldn't say it's unfair. Why? Because the imbecile deserves what he got. Since he's an imbecile, that's what he deserves. Whereas the other person, who is intelligent, deserves something else. Questions like this. Let me ask you a question like this. We got to get down to one basic question. I think we mentioned this question once before. Can God, let's say God creates an ox and he creates a man. Could you say that's unfair because the ox has no knowledge and man does? Is that a legitimate question?
No.
In other words, can a person ask a question, is that unfair? God has the ability to create, right? Okay. Now, does that mean that God can only create things that are the same? Or can God create things that are different? He can create a rock that has no life. He can create something that has life, has no intelligence. He can create something that has intelligence. Is there anything which is unfair about that? It's unfair to the ox? You really think so?
Why?
But when we say missing out, what does missing out mean? Doesn't missing out mean there's a certain lack? Now, is the lack insofar as what he is, or is the lack insofar as what he's not? Insofar as what he's not? In other words, his lack is, then if God would not have created the ox, and then would you say that he also would have been missing out? Why not? Once God creates one thing, he has to create the infinite amount of the same things. Otherwise, the things that aren't created are missing out. That's the question?
That's an absurdity.
Things that aren't created, how could they be missing out? They don't exist. Insofar as the ox is not a man, he doesn't exist as a man. Isn't that true? He exists as a different being. So how could you possibly say, when according to Robbie's definition is, let's universalize Robbie's definition. Deserve does not mean... Right. Now, the thing is like this. Therefore, when you speak in terms of justice, there's only justice insofar as you're dealing with equal entities. Isn't that true? Right? In other words, it would be unjust to treat two... If, for instance, you had something that well, we'll use this word, deserves, that deserves a certain action, right? Now, if you had the two things that deserved a certain action, right, and they didn't go one thing, and it didn't receive this action, that would be a lack of justice, right? But if you have two different things, it's not a lack of justice. They're two different things, isn't that true? Now let's take a little further. When we say, for instance, we're discussing over here God's justice, right? If we should say that a person who has knowledge, person who has chachma, person who has knowledge, deserves X, right? But a person who doesn't have knowledge, he doesn't deserve this X. He deserves Y, right? Now, that being the case, so you can't ask a question. It would seem that you can't ask a question as to the person who is an Oshkosh, right, who has no knowledge, isn't getting the reward. Since we say the reward is a natural result, right? So he doesn't have the knowledge, so therefore he doesn't get the reward. Would that be unfair? In other words, then we could ask the same question. Is it unfair to create, let's say for instance, in other words, to create one with knowledge and create one without knowledge? Isn't that the same unfairness? Why is that any different? If he's telling me, let's say you have two equal people, one was given a situation, one was not given a situation, right? Why is that different than creating two unequal people? Why is that different? Let's say, for instance, us here. We're in a limited environment. We don't have Gan Eden, right? Is that fair? So let me ask you a question. Let's say, for instance, one person is more intelligent than another.
Right.
Would you say that's unfair also?
Not fair.
Why is that fair? Okay. Now, what difference does it make whether the one is intelligent because he has an innate thing or because God gives him an external ability, an external situation? He creates two skeletons. One he gives him mind, one he doesn't give him mind. See, before he had two skeletons, so therefore he didn't treat them equally. When he gave one to mine, when he gave the other nothing.
Well, he has mind.
Okay.
His entity is not a skeleton.
All right. So now, what's the difference over here? What difference does it make if God creates two beings and one of them he gives the ability for knowledge and the other one he doesn't? Isn't that one? What difference does it make? So then, if for instance, let's say for instance he gave, is there any difference between God giving a person a mind, right? Which he can use, right? Or let's say, is there any difference in God not giving a mind, or God giving endowing a skeleton with a mind which it will never be able to use? Is there any difference in those two cases? Is there any difference between a case where God, let's say, for instance, you take a skeleton and you don't give it a mind, or you take a skeleton you give it a mind that cannot function? Is there any difference between those two?
What's the difference?
If the being has a mind, then it deserves certain things, because insofar as it has a mind, it deserves certain things, right? So if it has a mind, so it deserves certain things, right? Okay. Now let me ask you a question. When you say deserves, what do you mean deserve? What do you mean by deserves?
I really don't know. I
Press it again. In other words, see, the thing is like this. You got it. That's the point. Okay. Let's see. See, the question is, when we say deserve, what do you mean by deserve? Deserve means that the object has a certain right. Now, what is the object? Isn't the object only an object of the Creator? If you create something, does that thing have a right? By virtue of what does it have a right? Do you understand what I mean? See, the assumption of a right is an assumption which doesn't want right. existence in the right. It's a claim. We'll claim against who? It's something you have a certain feeling like that. You have a certain right, a certain claim. Now, what claim does an object that is created have to its creator? Does it have any claim? You see? So the concept of claim doesn't exist. Right? You understand? The concept of claim does not exist. The only thing is, see, but that doesn't solve so that's the end of the question, so now you can't ask a question anymore.
God does whatever he wants with the object, and that's fair.
God operates according to justice, but this is not a concept of justice. In other words, an object that is created has no claim, so therefore you can't say it is unjust, right? But that's the case, that's the end of the question, right?
Still God has to treat people equally.
Let's go to another question. But it really doesn't answer the question. Why doesn't it answer the question? I'll tell you why. Because there's two things, you see. Insofar as a claim, you're right, it has no claim. But the point is, we say, if that's the case, then we'll say God is totally unjust, right? Because then we can't call it unjust. That's really just, because an object's creator has no claim. That's true. But the point is like this, that we say that God operates, his actions are perfect. What does it mean his actions are perfect? That means that when he creates something, he doesn't create something which cannot exist according to his best possible way, because that would be an action which would lack perfection. Do you understand what I mean?
No.
It's not a matter that the object has a claim on God. The object doesn't have any claim on God. But we say that God, with his knowledge, creates things which by their nature can fulfill their nature. You understand what I mean? You understand what I'm saying?
We would have a claim, but that's an
imperfection in the action of God.
Yeah, right.
Because God's action would then be like a person, that would be like a person produces something and the object that he produces is incapable of fulfilling itself. In creation, perfection in creation is to create, when you create something, that something which you create should be able to fulfill its nature. And if it can't fulfill its nature, then it's an imperfection in creation. You understand what I mean? So the question really is not a question anymore of justice. The question is thrown into another sphere. The sphere is perfection of creation. All right? Okay? I just want to get where the question belongs. You understand what I mean? Equality we get rid of, because equality is only an accident. Then the next question was deserves. Deserves, we found that there's no such thing as deserves, because an object that's created has no right or has no claim on its creator. What is it going to say? So therefore, the concept of claim is out. It boils down to the final framework is the actions of God in terms of creation. That a creator that is perfect, that creates perfectly, must not create an object which can never fulfill its potential, because that's a lack of creation. It's an imperfection in the creation, since the creation itself is incapable of ever achieving its fulfillment. You understand what I mean? I just want to show you where the question lies. Okay?
All right, so
yes, the thing is this. Rights, when we say obligation depends on rights. I have a certain right, you have a certain obligation, right? Okay. Now, rights and obligations can only be after God. In other words, rights and obligations must be where some being sets up these rights and obligations, right? Now, in other words, if God says, look, I'm doing this, now you have this, you have right A and right B. Now, therefore, if you do certain actions, you're going to have certain obligations, because other people have rights. You have obligations, you have certain rights, certain obligations. That's only possible if the system is created, you see? But God himself, there's no one to dictate rights to God. Do you understand what I mean? In other words, rights are only within a system. Once a system is set up, so a system is set up to function in a certain way. Now, therefore, the way the system is set up is that this guy has this right, that guy has this right, this obligation, that obligation. But there must be someone that sets up the system in order to have rights and obligations. You know what I mean? No, one second. But the point is, if you, let's say there's a being that's the only being in the world, so why can't that being, there is no obligation, this being has no obligation to anybody. He's the only being. There is nothing, in other words, there is no, you can't speak in terms of rights and obligations in relationship to God. Because God is, what kind of obligations does he have? You understand what I mean? In relationship to God, you can never speak in terms of obligations, because God has no obligations. On the contrary, say an obligation, it would mean that that somebody has to impose an obligation. An obligation has to be imposed on somebody. You can't say that God has an obligation. Since God is the only creature, he's the only real being, right?
Sure,
now he can, if he wants to do something, he can do it. There's no obligation to him. Let's say
obligated
person. What? In other words, like this. A person lives according to what is best to him. Would you say that he has an obligation to do that? Or say
it's a necessity.
An animal lives according to certain truths. You say the animal has an obligation? Obligation is only when you have a system. You have a certain system. So now, once you deal out to each person what each person's rights are, so then you have certain obligations, certain rights. But in relationship to God, such a thing's impossible. That's why I say the only thing in relationship to God is that Avraham Avinu, for instance, tying us to God, it's not a time that he has an obligation. Person has an obligation. Of course, the person has an obligation because God set up the obligations. He says, you must do this and you must do that. And since you're a creature of God, you must do it. You see? But insofar as God is concerned, there's no one to dictate to God what he has to do.
What is
his tina? His tina is different. His tina is that since God, it's part of God's nature to act in accordance with wisdom, right? So his question is, over here, where is the wisdom? You understand? The only tina to God is that it's an imperfection in God's action. That's his tina. So with God, you can't use the word rights and obligations. It's just a question of imperfection, perfection and imperfection. Since God's action is always perfected, so therefore it says over here, this will be an imperfect action. You understand what I mean? But in relationship to God, there's no obligations and no rights. Let's say, for instance, I play myself. I'm a little kid sets up his own little world. Sets up his own little world over there. He makes this and that. There's no obligation. He can do whatever he wants. You understand what I mean? There's no one to do what kind of rights. If he's the creator, if he's the one that's making up the thing, so he can do whatever he wants, there's no obligation. It would be an imperfection. Let's say you'd let a kid play. Let's say you could create little things over there. Little ants or whatever. So you say, well, you can't create this, you can't create that. Why not? He can do whatever he wants. His system. He wants to do whatever he wants to play this game, play, he can set up the game, whatever he wants. There's nothing... The only thing you can question is, it has to come back to his nature. You know what I mean? The question is, it would be an imperfection in his nature to do certain actions. So with relationship to God, you can't ask the question in terms of God has an obligation to me or not. There's no obligation. You're something that was created by him. You have no rights against him. Who's setting up that system? There's no one bigger to set up the system. God can do whatever he wants. He's free. He wants to create this, to create that, create whatever he wants. You understand what I mean? He has the right because everything's his. If you own everything, simply, if you own everything, you have all the rights. Now, God owns everything. Kainah Shemai Varetz. So, therefore, he's Kainah Shemai Varetz. He can do whatever he wants. There's nothing to stop him. If you don't have the right, if it's not yours, then you don't have the right. That's only within the system. But something which is yours, you have total rights. You can't. If I have my own world, I want to look. Let's say I could create things, right? So I'll say, look, I feel like creating this crazy, ridiculous thing. I want to do it. Is anybody going to stop me? What's wrong? Let's say a scientist could create, theoretically, a guy could create a Frankenstein. Say it's not fair. What do you mean? I could have the right to create it. Unless society comes and says, it's right, you hurt society. Whatever it is. But otherwise, I have my own rights. I can do whatever I want. The only thing would be, it's not a question of rights or obligations. God can't fail to fulfill an obligation. The concept of obligation is alien to God. The only thing is that we say that God's nature is perfect, so therefore he can't do an action which has an imperfection. That's the point. But it's not a question of... We say it's within his nature that he will never do an action that has an imperfection. That was Avraham's tina. Avraham's tina was, how can you do this? It's an action that's imperfect. But not that he doesn't have the right to do it. See, rights is only within the created beings have rights. Something which is created. Why? Because God creates you. He gives you this. He gives you X amount of rights. Now, those are your rights, and you have certain obligations. But the initial creator himself, he can't speak in terms of rights and obligations. He can do whatever he wants. Who's going to stop him? Who's he being unfair to? He's being unfair to who? The question still exists. So then the question is, but it's thrown into a different framework. The framework of the question is now, where is the perfection? That's the question. It would seem to be imperfection if you have one person that has a mind and can use it, and another person that has a mind and can't use it. Right? Okay. Now, relationship to the Father and the Son, that's a different story. That's because he has the right to create a being. God gave him the right to create a being, but when he creates that being, he has a certain obligation. That's because of God, not because of himself. If he had the right to destroy his son, let's say a person had a right to kill his son, he had a right to do anything, then he wouldn't say, so what? I could produce one and destroy it. What am I doing wrong? That's the question I thought. The thing is, that in terms, and that's why you see that there must be a system of Yahadis. Because if you say that there is a God and that God gave you a system, then you can speak in terms of obligations. But if you say there's no God, right? So the person's an atheist. And he doesn't believe in Akash Baruch, he doesn't believe in any thing. So what kind of obligations does anybody have to anybody else? Who gave the obligations? Oh, what justice? I can do it. Who says I have to keep justice? Who demands justice to begin with? What do you mean in itself? I don't want to accept justice. Yeah, society demands. Right. But then that's only insofar as first of all, I have no obligation. Who says I have an obligation to society? I just have to watch out not to get caught. But what do I have an obligation to society? Well, who said I have an obligation to society to begin with? You understand? Who cares? See? So the truth of the matter is that if you do not accept the system of Yahadis, if you don't accept the system of Yahadis, you don't accept the God-given system, then there really is no such thing as justice, no such thing as obligations. Who gave me an obligation? That there can only be obligations in terms of the Torah. That's the only time you can have obligations. Otherwise, it's all fantasy of the mind. Guy imagines he has obligations, but there's no real obligations. Obligations can only be as he who created. If someone creates a system, then the creator could say that this is what this one does, that's what that one does. He have obligations. But if there's no such thing as a creator, what kind of obligations do you have? It's not that God wants to play a game over here, that this one has obligations. The obligations are within the nature of each thing. Right. But if I don't accept that there is such a thing, so then why must I have obligations? What's the obligations? The question is, again, that so the question boils down, it's the same question, but it's in a different framework. The question is, where is the perfection of God's actions? That's the question. If God creates one being, in other words, we assume, we're saying he creates two equal beings, right? Or even, well, using the equality as a measuring rod. And one being, obviously, you see that the fulfillment of the being takes place in one way, and the fulfilling of the other being can't fulfill itself. So it seems to be an imperfection of God's actions, right? Okay. Right, huh? So one question. I think we'll have all the material that we have to work with, okay? My question is like this. Let's say, for instance, when we speak about a mind and we speak about knowledge, right? Now, we have to understand there's two possibilities. Is mind, for instance, like a tree that needs water, right? That's the way the mind is. Or is mind like a seed that can become into a tree through knowledge? My question is knowledge water to the tree, or is knowledge as the tree is to the seed? You understand what I mean? All right. You understand? Okay. I mean, like this. There's two possibilities. Two possibilities. One possibility is, I give you the analogy. One possibility is that you have a mind, like you have a tree, right? Now it needs water. Water is a condition. The tree exists, but the tree needs water in order to exist. You understand that, right? Okay. That would be like the mind exists and the mind needs knowledge, just like the tree needs water. Right? Okay. But there's another possibility. The possibility is like this, that the mind is like the seed. And when it gets knowledge, it develops. Knowledge causes the mind to develop into something else. You understand? There's a difference between potentiality. See, what does potentiality mean? Potentiality means, like for instance, you say that water causes a tree to exist, right? But water also causes a seed to become a tree, right? There's a difference in. Strike that last analogy. Let's take it for this way. That the other way is like this. That the water working on the seed, you see, creates a tree. In other words, what happened is the seed was one thing before, and then with the water it became developed into another entity. Right? Okay. Now my question is this. When the mind gets knowledge, what does it mean? Does it mean that when the mind has knowledge, it's a whole new entity? Once it has the knowledge? You see? Or is the mind like the tree? The mind isn't a new entity with knowledge. It needs knowledge. Knowledge is necessity for the mind. Okay? You understand what I'm saying?
He doesn't fulfill the change.
Right. Now, dependent upon how you're going to interpret it, you will see it will make a big difference in terms of justice. You understand? You see why, or should I tell you why?
No, then. I'd rather not, but.
What? Next week? Okay.
No, I'd rather.
So let me tell you one more thing. The thing is like this. That if you say that the mind is like the tree and the water is like the knowledge, so then it would be unfair. You say that here you have a mind which needs water, right, and it doesn't get it, and here you have a mind which needs water and it gets it. Right? And by the nature of the thing is God being a perfect creator, since he creates the tree, he has to supply with what it needs, right? But if you say that knowledge is like the tree, knowledge is the makes the seed into the tree, right? So then you can't ask a question anymore. You can't say, in other words, what's your question going to be? The question is going to be, how come one mind got the knowledge and the other one didn't? They're two different beings now. They're two different beings. In other words, it wouldn't be unfair. You see, it wouldn't be unfair because you're dealing with two, you're comparing two different entities. You understand what I mean? In other words, one is a seed and one is a tree. Now, you can't ask the question, why did this seed develop into a tree and why did another seed not develop into a tree? That's two different beings. You understand what I mean?
Doesn't represent perfection anymore.
That's a different, you see, there's two different, in other words, like this. There's two different, then it would be a different question. There's one question, there's two different questions as far as imperfection of action. One imperfection is to create a being that doesn't have its needs, right? That would be one type of imperfection. Another type of imperfection would be to create an extra thing. Creating something which is extra. Now, if a seed doesn't develop, it's not a being that is lacking something. It's an extra thing. Why do you have the seed there, right? That's a different question. But if, you understand what I mean? But if the being is developed and it has its, and it doesn't, it's not supplied with its needs, then it's an imperfection in terms of the creation and the nature of the thing. You understand what I'm saying? I'm saying there's two different types of imperfection. See, one imperfection is, why does it exist? What's the purpose? That's one type of imperfection. Why is a seed? Well, let's say God would create a seed that would never grow. What's the purpose of the seed? But you can't say it's an imperfection in terms of the seed not having what it needs, because the seed has what it needs. You see? You understand what I mean? The question is, what is it there for? You understand? But if, for instance, you have a tree that doesn't have water, then it's an imperfection because the nature of the thing is it needs something and you're not supplying with its needs. So then that's an imperfection. There's two types. The other question is, it will be an action for nothing. Melechus Avtala. Right? That's what the philosophers call it. Melechus Avtala. God doesn't do Melechus Avtala. It means something for nothing. So if God creates a seed, it has to have a purpose. Right? That's one type of perfection. But another type of perfection is where the thing has to have what it needs, right? Now, the question of mind, the question that was raised before, we have to see which framework we're going to put it in so we know what type of a question is it. If we should say knowledge is like the tree needs water, so then we would say that, one second, it's unfair. Here one guy has water, one guy doesn't. And you see, obviously, the nature of the things that needs water, right? But if you say that knowledge renders the individual a different being, then it's a different question. And the question is, why does this seed over here exist? Why does this mind exist when it never became something else? But you can't say that it's lacking in its state. Mm-hmm. You understand what I mean? Okay. Now the answer is like this, see? The Rabbi Moskowitz wanted to say that once you say that God, there's no obligations for God, right? It's just a question of his actions, right? So then he said that... Then he said that that now the question's off, right? Why is the question off?
Because he has the right to make of any purpose he wants.
He has the right to make of any purpose he wants. Okay. The thing is like this, though. That there are two things over here. See, in insofar he has a right to make for any purpose he wants. But there will, the question will be like this. The question will be, if you say God cannot create imperfection, insofar something has a need which is not fulfilled, you understand, then definitely that would be an imperfection. Because then we're speaking in imperfection in terms of what the need is. If it has a need and it's not fulfilled, then that's an imperfection. However, the other question is, what's the purpose of something? In other words, why does this thing exist? That you can give your answer. This thing exists to serve something else. If the seed, for instance, in other words, insofar as the seed is concerned, the seed doesn't have to become a tree. The seed can exist for another purpose. That's the Marshal of Dovah Melech over there with the Medrash says, with the spider. See? The spider doesn't have to exist for the spider itself. It exists for another purpose. But that's as long as you tell me that there is no object that is created that isn't missing its needs. But once an object is created that's missing its needs, then there's an imperfection because it's lacking what it needs.
Well, how do you measure needs? It's not in terms of purpose.
So therefore, if a person has a mind that doesn't develop, right? Now, if you tell me that the mind that doesn't develop, that it's like the seed, so then you can't ask the question, then it's not an imperfection in terms of the thing is the mind is lacking what it needs.
Right.
Because there's nothing lacking there. Right?
Right.
Ah. So then the only question is, what's the purpose of the mind? So then I can tell you, it's there for another purpose.
What do you mean?
It's there for another purpose.
No.
If it's lacking water, then it's an imperfection because it's lacking something that it needs.
Oh, but,
if we should say that mind, when a person, what Chachma does is creates a new being, creates a new entity. That's what we were saying all along the last few weeks, really. So if that's the case, if it creates a new entity, so then you can't say that if the person's mind didn't develop, that it's unfair, that it's an imperfection. Because it's not an imperfection insofar as it wasn't missing anything before. It was just, the only thing you say is that what's the purpose of having this ability if you're never going to use it? So I can tell you it's there for a thousand other reasons. You understand what I mean? But you follow? So therefore, the question of how come somebody does develop or doesn't develop is not really a question. The answer question, how come a guy's born in Oshkosh and he doesn't develop, right? Now, if you get it now, the question is, how do you interpret it? Do you say that the guy that's born in Oshkosh that doesn't have the mind, right? He has the mind. He doesn't have the knowledge, right? Now, insofar as he doesn't have the knowledge, are you saying that he is like a tree that doesn't have water? He needs it, but he doesn't. Or are you saying if he doesn't have the knowledge, that he's not then he's not that being?
No, I say he needs the water.
Oh, 1 second. So if it depends on, that's what I'm saying. It depends on how you interpret it. That's what I'm saying. If you say it's like the seed, so then there's nothing unjust about it. Because there's nothing imperfect in the action, since he didn't develop into that thing, so what? The only question is, what's his purpose of existence? I can find you another reason why he exists. You understand what I mean? So the point that we have to go into the question really is, as to which of the two is it to be equated to?
Well,
knowledge in the mind.
By the way, one thing
I'll tell you, that's really what the Gemara says. There's a Gemara, an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says machlekes about Iyav. So some say Iyav lehayav lenever, and some say they did exist. So the Gra says, they say from the Gra, I don't know how, it's hard to know from the Gra, you know, how authentic it is, but this post, you know, from the, one of the Ksufim there, Talmidah, says, Laihaya v'leinivra ela limashal haya, I think Gra says. He says that he was created for a mashal. Yeah, for an example. So what's the pshat? So the question is, but where's the justice? Why should the guy be created for an example? The answer is you can't ask that question anymore. Why? Because the only time you can ask that question is, you see, if a being has certain needs that are unsatisfied. But if the being is created in a way that it will, the being is created in a way that this is what it, this is its function and this is the way it exists, so you can't ask, what do you mean it's unfair? That's the, has both purposes are satisfied. It doesn't have any other needs, you see. And also, one, it doesn't have any other needs, and two, it has a purpose. So that could be the case of Eve. The man was created, he wasn't a man that had other needs that was lacking. That was the way he was created, with those he fulfilled his needs. That was his needs, you see? The question is, why do you have such a creature? The answer is, it was for a mushroom. You understand what I mean? Okay. So when we come back, we'll go... Somebody asked the question, said, how is it possible that God should create certain people who, on the whole, are raised in a situation where they don't have Torah, guy's raised somewhere in Akron, Ohio, right? So he doesn't know anything about he doesn't have a Chinaman's chance, right? So the guy could never have a life of Chachma, right? On the other hand, the guy's raised in New York City with parents in the military, sends to yeshiva, and the guy gets a background in learning, and he sees what learning is, and his whole life is different. Now we say that definitely the person who was raised in the environment of Torah has an infinitely greater life than the person who was raised out in the Midwest, right? Now it seems to be the question was Hashgachas Hashem. How could the Hashgacha make one person doomed to a life of an inferior life, and another person is fortunate, right? That was the question we asked. Okay, I think anybody that thinks about it certainly will see that he said in relationship to God. I said that was an important thing that we came out with. We said that in relationship to God, you can't ask about rights. Isn't that what we mentioned?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you can't. In other words, one to the question of rights. That the question of rights cannot exist in relationship to God. This is a very important thing. If anything, whether we get the answer, we don't get the answer, I think this is more important than any of the other points we discussed. This is something which is a common mistake that people have. Like, people think of rights. They think in terms of rights. Like you say, I live in the United States, and everybody has his rights. Correct? Now, we mentioned that rights, what are rights? Rights are only something that exists within a system. But just to say that there are rights doesn't make any sense. In other words, in relationship to God, you can't speak of rights. Because, let's say a person, what we say with something like this, let's say a person does not accept God. A person doesn't believe in God, right? We said if he doesn't believe in God, then he cannot have any concept of rights. Because who gives the rights? In other words, what do rights mean? Rights mean that a superior being organizes a situation and he says A should do this, B should do something else, C should do something else. So he endows them because there is a system of creation. And because he's created a certain system and he wants the system, it is his will that the system operates a certain way. So the rights are an expression of his will. All the rights are, rights means that it's an expression of his will because he is the one that has created the situation. But if you speak of the Creator himself, you can't speak in terms of rights. Well, let's put it in a more practical way. Let's say, for instance, the person doesn't believe in God, correct? So you can't say that you'll say, well, another human being has rights. Why should another human being have rights? What basis do you have to assume that he has rights? I want to kill the guy. What's going to stop me from killing the guy? What's going to prevent my action from killing him? Why? You say he has rights. What do you mean he has rights? What kind of rights? All he has is life. And I want to take away his life so I can take it away. What prevents me from doing it? Wasn't that the point? We said the only time you're going to have a system of rights is if you believe that there is a creator who made a certain situation. And within the situation, he wants certain things to occur. And he endows each individual within the system. He says, this person, A, should live this way, B should live this way, and therefore that's how the rights come about, because he's the one that created, and inherent in the creation he says that this one should do this. But if you're going to say, there's no such thing as a God, there's no God who created the situation, so then all you see is human beings, right? So what's wrong if one guy wants to kill the other? Who says that this other human being has rights? From where do they come from? That situation. You're right. If you have, let's say, for instance, you have a government, you have an authoritative body. Correct. That's right. If you have an authoritative body which says that this is our country and we want, again, you have an authoritative body. It's true. It's not, let's say it's not God, but it's an authoritative body. That's correct. If you have an authoritative body can say that we want the system to be governed in such a manner. So therefore, what? One second, hold on. So if you have an authoritative body, we're discussing the point of rights, human rights. So without God, there can't be any human rights, because we say, I want to kill a guy, what's going to prevent me? What happens if you have an authoritative system? So either you have God, his will,
Or if you don't have his will, so then you'll say you have a government. Let's say you have a king, a man runs the government. He says, look, you want to come to this country? You have to do this. Okay, you're not allowed to kill this guy. That means this guy has rights. But if you're going to say govern, then you have to speak in terms of governmental rights. But there's a difference between God-given rights and governmental rights. What's the difference between God-given rights and governmental rights? Very simple difference. I can get around it. I can have the advantage of having the government, the governmental system, so that people can't kill me. But let's say I can kill others. The mafia abide by that philosophy. That's the philosophy of the mafia. Really? What's the philosophy? They don't inherently believe in the person's right to live. Correct? So therefore, and they maintain, they think they can get away with it. So therefore, they go around killing people. You understand? But if it's God's right, then you can't, because obviously the one that you're dealing with is a superior being, and there's no way to get around it. You know what I mean? Now, even God has no way to substantiate his rights. The whole concept that this government is founded on, in other words, in the Constitution, where they mention that each person is endowed with certain rights, that's an assumption. I want you to know they were very smart the way they put it down. They put it down as an assumption, incapable of proof. They just assume it. But the assumption is only based on God. If you don't have a God, there's no assumption. What kind of rights? No rights. So I want to kill somebody. What's going to prevent me? What do you mean he has rights? All he has is life. That's the only thing he has. If I want to take away that life, why can't I take it away? Finally, without a superior being that has a governing, that has a system, then it simply does not exist. There's no basis for it. Okay? That was one of the points I mentioned. So therefore we said in relationship to God, you can never ask the question, what right does he have to do something? Because he is the one. He's the one that he's the creator, right? Now, since he's the creator, he has all the rights. The only thing is, in his system, there are rights. The individuals, but he himself, you can't say what right does he have. He has a right. God could create anything he wants. In philosophy, if we really want to understand philosophy, what we have to do is understand the things the way they are, and then from the Torah, we have a tremendous advantage because the Torah is a system that was given to us by God, so then we could use the system to help us go further, to understand. See, if something's difficult, then we have to explain it, we have to understand it. Correct? Okay. But if you use the system alone, and you don't understand how things are working, then you don't have any real knowledge. You'll just know the postulates, but you won't really understand. What we're trying to do here is to go beyond that, to understand it. Now, therefore, in terms of understanding, we see there's no such thing as rights in relationship to God. That's what it would seem, right? And yet there's a question that we have from the Masorah, which we know is also God's work, which seems to contradict this. All right, the question that was asked is as follows. The question is, what was Avram's question with Sodom? He said, Aftis Betatik in Russia. So he asked God, God isn't just. So God could say, look, I can do whatever I want. Based upon what we're saying, there's nothing restricting God. I mean, he is not a creation of any other being. You do whatever I want. Matter of fact, if you keep asking me, I could take care of you too, so better be careful. How would you answer that question? Okay. What? Now, the truth of the matter is that most people do not realize this contradiction. For instance, in the world today, let's say, for instance, psychoanalysts, psychologists, who do not believe in God, many of them, right? I want you to know that if what they maintain, if they really do not believe in God, then they have to admit that there's no system of rights and there's no system of ethics as well. But yet they seem to live in a tremendous contradiction, because on the one hand they would maintain it would be wrong to kill somebody, or wrong to harm somebody, and they have a system of ethics. On the other hand, they maintain that there's no such thing as God. Now, this, I want you to know, they are living in a contradiction, in a total contradiction. Because if they were really consistent, then they'd have to admit that they really have no system of life. But they don't seem to do this, at least from the writings that I've come across. They don't seem to do this. This is something they fail to realize. I don't know why. It seems like such a simple thing, but for some reason or other, most of the world doesn't realize it. They do not recognize. See, certain things like rights that we're raised with, these ideas of rights that we're raised with, people fail to analyze them, because they just assume them, because it's something that they've been taught in school since little kids. They go to school, you know, they say the pledge allegiance to the flag, you know, the rights and everything, and it's something that they accept and never question anymore. The truth of the matter is, if you think into it, I would like to see what the answer is, what answer they would give, I mean, to the question of rights by who? Who designated the rights? Why can't we do whatever we want? What's limiting me? Government? Okay, let's say I can get around the government. Let's say I can kill somebody with perfect murder. So why can't I do it? What? Go on. They don't exist. The government. In other words, really the rights don't exist. It's just government, right? Now, if it's just government, so then if I can get around it and the government won't catch me, so what's wrong with that? You understand what I mean? This happens to be a very important point. You're talking to people who aren't from, and you want to discuss, you want to show them what the base of Frumkeit is. Many times you're better off not arguing Frumkeit, but showing them how their system is wrong, inherently is wrong. I think this is a point that could always be used, a very powerful point, because it shows them that they don't know the way they're living. If you want to get people to closer to Yadis, the first thing you have to do is to show them that their lives are inherently inconsistent. As long as you don't get that idea across, as long as they feel that they are living and have some system, so now you're saying, well, I'm offering you a better system. Yeah, but I have a system too. I'm not so sure yours is that much better, a little better, who cares, maybe mine's better. But if you show them, the way to get to reach them is to show them that they themselves are living an inconsistent life. That they have no system, living a crazy way. See, once they see that, you've taken away what they're using to hide behind all their lives. You're taking that away, and now they have to listen. This is one thing, this is one argument which is a very potent argument. Okay, but let's get back to the kasha. The question of this, please. It's good for me, it benefits me. So therefore it benefits me, but I know everybody wants to live, but do I want everybody to live? Why not? That's true. What's it got to do with it? Yeah, go ahead. People should be better off to be dead. But I'm deciding who it is, you know? I mean, what's wrong with that? So you're telling me, but if everybody would decide, there'd be chaos. So I agree, everybody shouldn't decide. But here I have a chance to decide, and I think this is a very good opportunity. Grab the opportunity. And they started, it's a small town with one doctor, and they started to see that everybody that really was vicious by nature, whenever he got sick, he had the doctor visited him, and that was the end of the guy. You know? Now this doctor felt that he is doing the greatest good for that town. Because what he is doing is he's weeding out the people that are the troublemakers. Bad people. Now he created a system because of his medical knowledge. He created a system in which that he had a wonderful town going there. Now what's wrong with that? Can you tell me what's wrong with that? The only way you're going to prove to me that it's wrong to kill is you're going to tell me, but you're going to get killed. That's the only thing, because that I don't want, right? So therefore, if I could kill without getting killed, that's a good thing to do. That's the philosophy of the mafia. They're not crazy. They have a philosophy. They have a way of life. That's their philosophy. Now, how could you prove that they're wrong? You're going to say, well, if everybody kills, you're right if everybody kills. Everybody shouldn't kill. But if I do, then certainly in this case, is the right thing to do. You can't generalize. You can say, because generally it's no good. That's why in particular it's no good. That's not true. Generally it's no good. But in particular, in this case, this is a good thing to do. No whatsoever to prove that inherently it's no good. Everybody's underlying tendencies are really in line with what I'm saying now, that they really would like to do that. But the only thing is that they can't, the law stops them. But everybody really feels at certain times that certain people would be better off society than have these people. His next door neighbor. You know, he's sure that certain times, certain people really would be much better off out of the scene. Okay? Asking a question from the system of Yahadis. But let's understand the ideas first.
We're going back to the rights of God.
Right, correct. Rights of God, morality. I'm the Shefi Kalaritz, and that's why Layasa Mishpat. Fits in the puzzle very well. What do you say? The authority itself isn't involved in these rights. Of course, the rights are only those things which were given over to that system which he created, which he has control over. But he himself is outside the right. So his question is, so what are we being asked of God? Or Shefa Kolos Leyas and Mishpat?
The question on
God's enough to dig there. But otherwise it wouldn't be. What? That's what he's asking. It's believe what I'm saying. That the good is only, because the only good that people perceive is insofar as their well-being, not insofar as others' well-being. Others' well-being they perceive as a good only insofar as it affects them. That's what I'm saying, right? But not inherently, they don't perceive the other's well-being as an inherent good, unless you believe in God.
But if you don't, then it's only your well-being. And the reason why you need all these laws is because otherwise my well-being is going to be interfered with. But in the case where my well-being will not be interfered with, then I can maintain that it is good to, not to worry about others. I'll prove it to you simply. Why do people cheat on income tax? Don't they know? Don't they know that if everybody cheats on income tax, that the government's going to fall apart, they won't have enough money? Or else the government will have to levy more taxes and you're not going to get away with it anyways? The answer is people cheat on income tax for a simple reason. Because they think that it's bad for others to cheat on income tax. Others it's bad for. That's what's bad. But for me, if I do it, no one knows and I get away with it. So, most people, and that goes for most people, if they could perform a crime where they would become tremendously wealthy, and no one would let's say they could rob a big company, a multi-million dollar insurance company, and they can get away with $1 million. Believe me, if they knew they can get away with it, they would not worry too much about what will happen to society after that. They're worse than society, $1 million. So they'll make it up somehow. So they'll have a little less money. So on. But meantime, I will have that great enjoyment. That's the philosophy of most people. They won't admit to it, but they actually do believe that way. But the truth of the matter is I'm not condemning them. I'm saying that they're right, based upon the premise that there's no God. They're right. That's the truth. That's the right way to be.
Doesn't everybody fall into the victimhood?
That's the point. It depends how you look at them. You know, in what sense the victim? Yeah. That's right. Right. Okay. Let me make a little back. And to God was not a question, like you said, based upon rights. Because God, you can't ask a question about God's rights. Avraham Avinu had knowledge of God. What's the whole God of Avraham Avinu? He was an individual who had knowledge of God. Like the Rambam says, he raised Nur Kasdim and he went to serve Avodah Zarah with his parents and the whole town over there. And then he started to think and he started to reflect. And he came to certain conclusions and he worked in philosophy and metaphysics until he reached an area where he comprehended to a great degree, insofar as the human mind can comprehend, what God is. Right? Now, the point that Avraham Avinu asked to God was based upon his knowledge of God's perfection. In other words, he wasn't asking God that we're in a system and we have rights and you have to abide by these rights. That wasn't his question. His question was a question, not a relative question. It was an absolute question. He had certain knowledge of God's perfection. And his question was, from what I understand, from what my mind tells me, your perfection is of this nature. That in your perfection, in your nature, you live, you act according to justice. Right? Therefore, his question, and also you're consistent. So therefore, his question was, how could a being that acts in accordance with justice, not because you're impelled to by any rights, but because that's your nature. Your nature is that you act according to justice. And your nature is that you are consistent, from what I comprehend of the nature. And Avraham Avinu was very confident in what he comprehended of God's nature. He wasn't doubtful. He knew that that was correct. So therefore his question was, that since my knowledge tells me that you are a being of such a nature, the action that you're performing now would seem to be inconsistent with that nature. And I'd like to understand how and why it is consistent with your nature. That was the question Avraham Avinu asked.
Could you repeat that?
Excuse me?
Yes.
It is consistent with my nature. Because this is the just thing to do at this time.
But that
should be it. Why not? Any knowledge of God, you see, that might be true. But the point is that Avraham Avinu's knowledge of God taught him that God is consistent. Because from God's actions, he was able to trace back a being that is consistent. So therefore, he knew that God was consistent. It's not that God... In other words, his question to God wasn't that God is impelled by certain rights that he has certain limitations, that he has to act a certain way. But he saw that his nature is such that that there's a consistent being here in the universe.
How could he know that? If he decides to be consistent...
In other words, if we want to go into the question of how Avraham Avinu knew that, then I'm afraid we're going to have a little difficulty with it. Because we'd have to be on his level. But let's assume that it would be possible to know that there is a being that is consistent. Let's take a regular case. Let's say, for instance, you take the greatest psychologist, greatest psychoanalyst, who analyzed a human being, and he'd say that this human being is consistent. We've analyzed and we see he's consistent in every action, right? So we can understand it in terms of comprehending a human being, right? Now then, we would have knowledge that this being is consistent.
Right? And then if we'd find something that's inconsistent, it would be a difficulty. Now, Avraham Avinu had knowledge that God is... I understand. But Avraham Avinu had knowledge that God is a consistent being. Because his metaphysical knowledge of God showed him that there is a consistent being that acts in a certain way. And now his question was, he said, you, God, are this consistent being. That I know. But now, over here, at this point, you seem to be doing something that's in conflict. See, that's a good question. In other words, his question to God was not based upon the fact that God has limitations. His question to God was based upon his knowledge of God's nature. He saw God has a certain nature. And now his question was that you are not acting in accordance with that nature. That was his question. You understand? His question wasn't based upon rights. His question was based upon God's nature. He did know that. No, he's not obligated to be consistent. No, God has no obligation.
What's the answer?
I know he's consistent. Let's say he is
granted.
Something is consistent.
How do I know that he's consistent? Because he observed X amount of cases of consistency. Therefore, your question is, since he observed X amount of cases of consistency, those X amount of cases could be explained two ways. Right? Right? I'm saying Avraham Avinu did not know that God is consistent based upon observation. No. Yeah. He knew inherently from God. He knew it inherently from knowledge that God's nature has to be that way. Because he knew that there has to, based upon the fact that he knew there has to be a being which is total knowledge. So I just give you a little bit of the approach. I mean, I can't go into the whole thing. But based upon the fact that he knew, he started to think that there must be a being here who is total knowledge, who's above all defect. Not because he observed God and he saw that in X amount of cases he was consistent, but because he knew there had to be, he knew from the universe that there had to be such a being that has such a nature, and that nature would dictate that it has to, consistency would have to be part of that nature. You understand what I mean? That's how he knew that God is consistent. Not that he knew that God is consistent by observation, like a scientist in the laboratory who observes that X amount of cases. That's not the type of knowledge Avraham Avinu has. That's right, because we can't go into the proof. You can only say that he knew from analyzing the universe, he knew there had to be a being who was inherently consistent, whose nature must be X, must be this, it must have intelligence, his nature must be consistent. He knew that there has to be such a being. Now, once, from his metaphysical knowledge, he knew that this was so, then his question was, okay, now God, I see that you are this is your nature, you see? Therefore, my question is, how could this action possibly result from such a nature? It would be impossible. He judged the wrong word.
But then he's not judging right and wrong.
No.
He's just ruling.
A judge by nature. Judge by nature doesn't have to be given plain judges that are inconsistent. The person, the conscience.
Judging for right or for wrong.
Don't you see there's one word missing over there?
Hashem.
There's no point. But God exists. You say there's no point to have God. He's there. I mean, what are you going to say? There's no point. You can't say there's no point. There's no point for you to make such a thing. But there is such a thing. But if God exists, he exists. There's no point means there's no. I wouldn't set up such a thing. They can't say that about God. There's no point. You say God. There's no point in having you around. I mean, it's ridiculous. The question is, Hashem Feit Kol Ha'aretz means he who judges the world justly, not who judges the world. There are plenty of people that judge. That's right. The way my knowledge of a just judge. In other words, what I find, you can't. I want you to understand something. When the Torah says these things, everybody holds that the Dibra Torah Kolashim and the Adam. But it doesn't really mean literally that we're talking about judges here. It means that Avraham Avinu meant that from my knowledge of the universe, there is a being who is just and whose actions relate to this world justly. That's what Shofet Kol Ha'aretz means. So he says, now since there is such a being, and you are that being, how could it be that this action doesn't fit into the rest of the things that you're doing? That's his question. His question isn't just because you judge the world. You judge the world, so what? There are plenty of people that judge. They judge. The people that judge in the Supreme Court judge the whole country. And why isn't it possible that the world was never totally conquered, but it's possible to have the world be totally conquered by one being and judge the whole world? You'll say that judge will have to do justice? Not necessarily. Only if his nature is just. Only if he is just. That was his conscience. Shofei Kol Ha'aretz is not because he judges the whole world. Judging the whole world doesn't mean anything. It's because his
nature.
That's exactly right. Because he, that being whose nature is just, and his nature is to extend his justice to the inhabitants of this planet, That being who acts that way, how could he, and who is consistent, how could he possibly not do it this way, not do it this time? That was his question. It's far superior to our level. We can't even comprehend it. Right. But we do know, we can know about it. We know he was a being that was, he was an individual who was able to comprehend. A person, a living organism that was able to comprehend that there is in existence a certain being.
Right.
That is far superior to far above any human type of description, and who is inherently, who has to have essentially as part of his nature, or as his nature essentially has to be knowledge and justice and consistency. It must be one nature that has all these things in it.
He was really asking how he consistent.
That's right. Exactly right. Of course, everyone knew that God. He didn't question that. Avraham Avinu didn't question that God doesn't know what he's doing. I want you to understand that. Avraham Avinu didn't question that God, and say, one second, God, you're not doing the right thing over here. His question expressed itself that way, but the question essentially was, he wanted to understand how it works. You don't think for 1 minute Avraham Avinu thought that God's going to be unjust. That's crazy. There's a level of human being who does things out of obligation, and then there's a level of human being who does that which is good because he wants the good, because he decides, makes a decision, he wants the good, but not out of any sense of obligation. And the Rambam says, in other words, if two people learn Torah, one person learns Torah because he feels an obligation, look, I have to learn every day from 9 to 1, I have to be here. That's an obligation I have. Then there's a person who does it not out of a sense of obligation, but because he wants to do it. He simply naturally wants to do it. So the Rambam says, who is on a higher level? Who is the real Oved Hashem? That's right, the one who wants to do it.
That's right.
That's Ovid Me'ava. That's what the Rambam says. So the truth
of
it.
He means
that's it. He's doing
not as high as the guy that's doing it.
That's right. Not as high. Therefore, he has to fight that part. That's right. That's because the Rambam says a person who doesn't want to do the good, it's an imperfection in himself because one part of him doesn't want to do it. So he has to coerce himself. But a person who naturally wants to do the good, like the Chazal, I mean, Tanoim, Amoraim, who naturally wanted to do the good, they didn't have any conflict in themselves, that's the highest level. He mentions Avraham Avinu as the individual. He says, the one who was the ultimate, the highest level of Oved Me'ava, Avraham Avinu, he mentions Avraham Avinu. He was the real Oved Me'ava. That God is obligated by certain rites, then it would mean, in essence, that God really wants to do evil, but he has a right, he has certain obligations. Which would mean that God's nature would be that God wants to do evil, but he feels, hey, I can't do that, I have an obligation. That would be an imperfection in God.
That can't be.
That would be an imperfection in God. Because you'd be saying that inherently he really wants to do evil, but he's being stopped by something. And first of all, you have to say that God has parts, is composed of parts. You have to say one part of him wants to do this, but the other part feels an obligation. And we say, Hashem Echad, there's no such thing in God. That's why I can't say that inherently in terms of knowledge of God. That would be an imperfection of God. You can't say that. Okay. All right, let's take up... Rodney asked a very powerful question, though. This question is a very, very strong question. Question is that now that we've shown... now that we have shown that in reality there is no such thing as rights, as inherent rights endowed upon individuals, unless you accept that there is a God who created the individuals and who wants them to live a certain way and therefore they have these rights. So the question asked was, if that be the case, then it would seem that God's knowledge, that when God tells us to act a certain way, it's because he wants us to act a certain way. But in reality, knowledge does not corroborate this. It would be as if, in other words, we'd be saying like this, that the truth of the matter is, the good is for me to be able to kill others. That's the reality. That's what knowledge tells us. But God tells us no, we shouldn't. So it would seem if this really is good, so then it should be good in reality. We're saying in reality it's good to be the other way, but God is telling us to act another way. It's as if God is telling us to do something which in reality is not good. But we do not say that. We always maintain that whatever God... Well, murder. But now God comes along and tells us not to do it.
So in other words, God's telling us to do something that's not good for ourselves. Because the real good is for me to be able to... Because we said before that if there is no such thing as a God, right, then there's no such thing as individuals being endowed with rights. Correct? Okay? The truth of the matter is that it is bad to kill. Why? And I'll just elaborate from the way he put it. Just let me change something with the way he put it, and I'll tell you to expand it a little bit. What he said was like this, that when God gave us these laws and God told us not to kill, not to steal, what God was really telling us is that we shouldn't involve ourselves in satisfaction of these base materialistic emotions. Because by doing that, by involving ourselves in their satisfaction, so then we are following them and we're causing them to continue to dominate our lives. But rather, that perfection is to be reached by overcoming these emotions. And therefore, God told us that it is bad to do these actions. Right? So in other words, the truth of the matter is that it really is bad to kill. It really is bad to steal. Because doing that is following a certain base part of our nature. Now, by following this base part of our nature, we're augmenting this part. And we're continuing it. We're continuing its domination over ourselves, which is bad. What we should do is rather to pull away from that part of our nature and to allow it to die, because by involving ourselves in something far greater. So therefore, killing is bad and stealing is bad, and all the laws that are mentioned that are bad. That are bad. Negative laws. Okay, so correct. That's what Yaakov Lloyd answered. Okay, so in that way we're not in contradiction with what we said before, because before we were speaking in terms of rights, and we said that rights do not exist unless you have a supreme deity that dictates, or a supreme being that dictates the rights. So that is true. That is true also. Both arguments are true. The arguments that are true are as follows. It is true that it is good for a person to live according to the way the Torah says. Inherently, it's the best way for him to live. Correct? And also, it is true that there are no such thing as rights. Both things are true.
So
there's no contradiction.
Right.
That's right. Works both. But what we are saying is, to an individual who maintains that you shouldn't kill because of rights, we're saying there he is wrong. We're saying an individual who maintains the premise, why shouldn't I kill my neighbor? Because he has rights. We're saying that argument is faulty. There's no such thing as inherent rights. But we're saying if you tell me not to kill my neighbor because I should reach a higher degree of perfection, that's a good argument. See? So it depends what you, when I come with a gun, it depends how you confront me. See? If you confront me because of rights, I say you're wrong. You tell me I have to have perfection? Okay, drop the gun. That's what Yaakov Lloyd says. He has rights. He's saying the truth is, the reason why you shouldn't kill is because you shouldn't destroy yourself. You think you're destroying him, you're destroying yourself. That's what he's saying.
That's why that is the only reason.
He's saying the only thing there is perfection. Now, therefore, what?
Really, what's perfection?
I don't
know
the argument for rights.
No rights.
I don't know. God gave you rights.
To me.
No,
he said there's no such thing as rights.
There's nothing inherently right.
A mitzvah is that God told you. God didn't tell you. What do you mean a command? Yeah, you could do it. He gave you bechira. On the contrary, I have the right to choose evil. If you want to know what the right is, I have the right to choose evil. Exactly. That's right. As it says, the whole time is bechira, right? God gave me the right to make the choice. Now you'll tell me, the only thing is he told me that if I make the wrong choice, I'm going to destroy myself. That's all, that's the result.
So that without God, we wouldn't know anything.
Exactly. Well, that's a separate point. There, Sainte Guy says we would know certain things, but we'd never know certain other things we wouldn't
know. What is this?
And only certain people would know, like Avraham Avinu would know. Avraham Avinu didn't have any Torah, so he knew also, right? They see that without Torah, you could know. But only certain people would. We wouldn't know. We today would know.
What is this term perfection?
The answer is a very good one, by the way. But I'm not so sure that that's the total answer. We've satisfied Rodney. He's very satisfied. But what we have to satisfy is not Rodney, but ourselves. And therefore, I say that we have to take his question back. And I think if you really analyze, you see that his question isn't totally answered. One part of it is answered. What we said is, I think, is true. But we have to discuss the idea of rights. Is there such a thing as rights? There is not such a thing as rights. Okay? That's the question. Take it up next week. Okay? Think about it. Don't do anything that's dangerous. That's what we mean here, right? Okay. Well, the question was, this being the case, we are maintaining that without God, that there would be no such thing as rights. And now with God, there is such thing as rights. Question was, is it rational or not? Correct? In other words, if this is the best way for man to live, according to human rights, then this should be the best way, whether God, even without God. And if you're going to tell me it's not the best way, but it's only the best way because of God, so then you're saying, in essence, that God tells us to do things, and that's why they are good. But that's not what we maintain. We maintain that God tells us to do things because they are good. Correct? Wasn't that the question, more or less? We used as an illustration the doctor who was wiping out the evil people in the town through his carefully planned injections. So he said that he was benefiting the town. Now, therefore we said that would seem to be the best way. And now we see on the contrary that God tells us to live in a way that's not as good. Okay.
Are there more than one word?
So what do we say last week?
So there's one way to answer this question now, 2047.
I used the wrong word. So what do we say last week? We said that who says that there's such a thing as rights? There's no such thing as rights. We denied the entire concept of rights. Correct? We said there's no such thing. But the reason why you shouldn't kill is not because the other person has rights, but because it's bad for your perfection. Bad in terms of your perfection. Okay. If that be okay. Now, I should. However, it's not so simple. Because, hold on. So there's something in the Mira, which definitely could be easily comprehended, but many people just don't see it, don't accept it. But it's very simple to understand. The Rambam says like this. He says that any system, no matter what the system might be, if it is in general terms, it cannot include every situation for every individual. In other words, if you're going to work out the system of perfection of man, and you give general terms, you give general system, you cannot say that under every circumstance, every individual found in those circumstances is definitely going to benefit according to that system. He says, and the same thing, in other words, once you have a general system, so it's true, you could say that a better system includes more situations. And an even better system includes more people and more situations. But to say that every single situation possible will be included under this system to the benefit of every individual involved, he said that is an absurdity. The Rambam says it will not be to the benefit of every individual at every time not to eat chazer. He can't possibly say that. He says it's an impossibility to create a system that every single halacha in regard to every individual every time is going to be to his benefit. He also says that on the whole, it will be generally speaking, and of course, our Kadosh Baruch Hu system is the best possible system that could be devised. So therefore, it will be the greatest, it will include the greatest amount of cases possible that are possible to include. But nevertheless, the Rambam says, there still will be cases in which certain activities will not be for the benefit of the individual involved. Okay? So therefore, this is a provisions. Because there are too many specifics. In other words, you're saying the halacha has provisions. Yeah, you're right. Halacha has provisions.
Give examples.
Of what?
Let's say, quick, you mean? Forget about the ones that are.
It's not possible, the Rambam says, to make a system in which every situation is going to be halacha is going to be for the best. It's impossible. So it's inherently impossible. That's what I mentioned. I mentioned that Kadosh Baruch Hu. We don't say Kadosh Baruch Hu does the impossible. So we say over here as well. I'll give you an example.
Everybody knows that the reason why you have courts, you don't have to, this is already mishpat. Mishpat is seichel. You don't have to go into any, chukim over here. Everybody knows the reason why you have courts, obviously, is in order to have a system of law within reigning within society. I don't think anybody would ever have me that this isn't the reason, correct? Okay. Now, the Gemara says there was a case where some people wanted to get even with her. I think it was Shimon HaTzadik's kids. I think it was Shimon HaTzadik's kids. So, in Sanhedrin there. So, what did they do? So, they made trumped up charges, and they went through the Bezdin, and Bezdin was Chaykiv a Derish, but they were ingenious, and they got through, and they had to kill them, and they had to kill his kids who were totally innocent. Well, I think I said it was Michal Shabbos, was it?
It was Michal Shabbos.
Michal Shabbos, right. So now, I don't think anybody in their right mind would assume.
Right.
Would it, what?
What happened was they found out.
Because they confessed.
They had
to kill them anyways. That's right, they had to kill them anyways. Because Al Pidin, you have to kill them, even though, because it's too late already. Kim Shigashim and Achazim Magid. Okay. So you see that now here you see, I don't think anybody would think that this is the best thing to do. You understand in this case? Because obviously the whole purpose of the court is to have justice, not to kill innocent people. Correct? And yet in this case you have to kill innocent people because of the system. Right? So I think this is a good example of what the Rambam explains. That you can't possibly have a system, no matter how just it is, that will include every possibility under every circumstance. Even a terror system. Correct? Or let's say, conversely, you have a person who you know is a killer. You know he lives next door to you, and you see him bringing the corpses every night. Nevertheless, he's very brilliant, and he manages to evade justice. Now the question is, what about you taking things into your own hands and going over and shooting him? Now wouldn't this be in line with the purpose of the Torah? Correct? It certainly would be. Are Pidini allowed to do it?
No.
Okay. So I think it's very clear that there are certain situations in which you see that the system inherently has nothing to do with perfection, because perfection is to destroy evil. And here, if that's the case, just like a person has to love the good, a person must also despise evil. It's a mitzvah, sin as a rasha. It's just as much as everybody always talks about ahava, but sin is a big mitzvah too. Mitzvah to be sine, somebody that destroys a terror. A mitzvah, that's what a rasha. Sin as a malek, no question about it, because they two go together. The two go together. Okay. Now, if a person doesn't hate evil, so then he doesn't really love justice, and it's just an emotion. If he really loves justice, ipso facto, he has to hate evil. Same thing. This is what he wants. He has one objective.
One follows the other.
One follows the other. Since that is the case. So, and hating evil is a perfection. A perfection. The Rambam says, what does the Rambam say in the Rambam says when he gets finished with his Yudimel Ikarim? So the Rambam says, anyone that does not accept these Gimel Ikarim is not Bechlal Yisrael, U'mitzvah L'Seina U'la'o L'Avdai. L'Avdai. So mitzvah. Okay. So therefore, hating evil is a perfection. It's a perfection. So if that be the case, so then how come in this... So therefore, killing a person is a rasha, certainly not an imperfection. When Bezdin kills a rasha, is it imperfection? No, it's perfection, right? So how come if I kill that guy, who's my neighbor across the street, then I will be over in Issa Deraisa, even though it would seem that I would be totally in line with perfection? This would seem to remove the answer that we gave last week. Because this would seem to remove the answer we gave last week. Because the answer we gave last week was that there is no such thing as rights. Here we say why... He has rights. I mean, if you want to call it that way, he has rights. But the point is, I have no right anyways to kill him. And the question is, we said last time, the last thing is rights, but the reason why he shouldn't kill is because it's an imperfection. What do you do with the case that it does not involve imperfection?
Nevertheless, you can't do it. Okay?
All right.
The only reason you have to do it is because of God.
And how does that remove last week's answer?
It removes last week's answer because last week...